Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, November 9th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, host of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Benjamin Dixon. Also on the program today, host of Just Kill Me Now and star of the Judy Gold Show, Judy Gold. Also on the program, the blue wave getting wavier as Kristen Sinema takes the lead in Arizona and the Florida governor and Senate races enter into the realm of mandatory recount. Votes are still being counted. Nelson still has a chance of being on top when they enter into this recount. Meanwhile, in Georgia, Stacey Abrams calls for provisional ballot casters in hopes of pushing for a runoff. Right now, just outside that margin. And as protests start across the U.S., in an attempt to protect Mueller, Trump's new acting AG can't stop existing indictments from being unsealed. Meanwhile, on his way out, professional racist Jeff Sessions limits the Fed's ability to control racist police departments across the country. An Obama appointee federal court judge halts the Keystone Pipeline based upon the actions of an Obama Secretary of State. And a Clinton appointee fines against Trump on DACA, but why that may not end up so well. Meanwhile, Ryan Zinke may take his 18 investigations and go work for Fox, and Justice Ginsburg at home after a fall leaves her with three fractured ribs, fingers crossed. And the migrant caravan, remember that? Exhibit A in the media's failure to cover an election. And Greyhound sued for its ICE complicity. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. That complicity thing, I don't know what just happened there, but it just sounded like one of those words, like when you say it, all of a sudden you're like, that doesn't sound like a word. I should also say, you'll notice that when I mentioned the halting of the Keystone Pipeline and the finding against Trump on DACA, we now have a new style guide here at the Majority Report, where we always, when we talk about any federal court ruling, will remind you who appointed that judge, so that the idiots who exist out there who don't appreciate the importance of the federal judiciary, I'm not naming any names, but for people who don't understand the importance of the president having the ability to nominate federal judges and place them on the federal judiciary, this is a teachable moment.
What about advocating for a reverse axle filibuster? You never hold Democrats accountable because you're motivated out of fear, at many MSNBC.
So, the Keystone Pipeline is a great example of this. Now, I don't know if this gets going to kicked up. Probably won't in any time soon. But essentially, because the Obama administration, specifically the State Department, John Kerry's State Department, found that the environmental factors outweighed the national interests, or at least were more compelling national interests to the United States, that exists. And that creates a higher bar for subsequent administrations as to reversing that decision. Now, a Donald Trump appointed judge, I imagine, would say, yes, the Trump administration could do this. So it also is a teachable moment in terms of the flexibility of the law. And so this is pretty important stuff going forward and actually backwards. But we can't go backwards. We can only go forwards. So I just wanted to plant a flag there, as it were. The migrant caravan, incidentally, is in Mexico City now, which one would imagine would be creating all sorts of concerns within the media, right? Because they're more north than they were 2 weeks ago. Yet nothing. Really shocking that. But let's, this has been a long week, folks. And on Fridays, what we like to do is to go back in time and look over the week. So let's go all the way to what this was Tuesday morning, I believe, or maybe Monday night, the beginning of this week, when Sinclair Media sat down, although they were standing, with Donald Trump.
Is there anything, as you look back at your first almost 2 years, that you regret, that you wish on you, that you could just take back and redo?
Well, there would be certain things. I'm not sure I want to reveal all of them, but I would say tone. I would like to have a much softer tone. I feel to a certain extent I have no choice, but maybe I do, and maybe I could have been softer from that standpoint. But
okay, so there it was. And, you know, of course, he goes on to equivocate and say, but basically tone. Let's check in now. It's the end of the week. We are now 4 days later. This morning, how is that project on tone going, President Trump?
I think Jim Acosta is a very unprofessional man. I think he does this with everybody. He gets paid to do that. You know, he gets paid to burst in. He's a very unprofessional guy. Whether it was me or Ronald Reagan or anybody else, he would have done the same thing. Look, I don't think he's a smart person, but he's got a loud voice. Wait, David, do you mind if I answer the question? And as far as I'm concerned, I haven't made that decision, but it could be others also. When you're in the White House, this is a very sacred place to me. This is a very special place. You have to treat the White House with respect. You have to treat the presidency with respect.
You've got to treat me with respect.
If you've ever seen him dealing with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, it's a disgrace. And he does it for, you know, the reason. The same thing with April Ryan.
Yeah, let me mention, let me get someone,
I mean, you talk about
person of color,
a loser. She doesn't know what the hell she's doing. She gets publicity, and then she gets a pay raise, or she gets a contract with, I think, CNN.
So about money.
But she's very nasty, and she shouldn't be. She shouldn't be. You've got to treat the White House and the Office of the Presidency with respect.
It's a little thing called RSE.
But wait a second. But let's not. Maybe there could be other occasions. Maybe we just caught him at a bad moment, and that tone project's going better.
You expect Matt Whitaker to be involved in the Russia probe? Do you want him to?
It's up to him.
Do you want him to rein in Robert Mueller?
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question. But I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
He's such a bitch. Donald Trump is such a nasty
messy bitch who loves drama.
Wow.
You know, he also is starting to like slide into very close to where my Jewish grandmother was when she was besieged with ailments.
Like, I don't like you. Fine. You're black.
I'm fine.
Is that
I'm
what
fine.
Happened?
Yeah, more like I don't.
You thought I didn't. You thought I didn't do subtext before. How's this? I hate you. You are a black woman. I am a grotesque.
He seems to
mess.
Be a little bit uptight. He seems to be a little bit uptight. But
I'm having a ragegasm.
So I would say, I don't know. Can you really grade this guy on effort? I mean,
no.
Can you? Does he have like enough, even aware self awareness, to grade him on effort? I think just I would have to give him a really not a passing grade.
He's
on
off
the Tone
game.
Project.
He's
yeah,
off his game. He's not even on his game for being like funny and being a dick. He's clearly having a lot of anxiety, and it's making him tense and his performance
it's hard to build new habits. Okay,
well yeah. we'll talk about I want to talk about this with Ben Dixon about the implications of if Ben Nelson ends up taking the Senate and Kristen Sinema ends up taking the Senate, it's going to create some interesting dynamics that are very different than if it's than if either one of them loses, but we'll discuss that in a moment. Before we get there, folks, you know, because I've told you, and you must show respect for the podcast. The podcast needs to get respect. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create exceptionally comfortable sleep experiences one night at a time. We have two Casper mattresses between us. You have one too?
I just bought a Casper last week.
You did?
Excellent.
Did you
Excellent
use the coupon code?
Upgrade. Yes, I did.
All right. Good job. Did you get the... There are three models. You know that, right, Michael? There's the original Casper,
right,
the Wave, and the Essential.
I got the original Queen.
There you go. Whoa.
So when I have.
Queen. You have a Queen, too?
Yeah.
You guys are making me so jealous.
It's excellent.
I'm from the middle of the country. We have big beds out there.
Well, I guess so. Hello. Well, excuse me. Casper mattresses are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Not to mention the breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And it's delivered in your to your door in a small, how do they do that size box with free shipping and returns in US and Canada. Did you enjoy that, unboxing? Did you guys?
I did.
There you go, right?
It could not have been. I mean, you just carry the thing up the stairs. It's nothing. And
it's
then
super
you just
easy.
Slash the box open and you're done. It's amazing.
Well, let's be careful when you're slashing the box. You don't want to slash the mattress. Just be careful with the box.
Yes, be careful out there. Watch yourself.
The best part of buying a Casper is that you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. You're still within your 100 days, aren't you?
Indeed.
Nights. After all,
lording it over them. I email customer service every day. I don't know.
We'll see. Last night was good, but who knows about
who
tonight?
Who knows what tonight may bring?
I'm going to try it out with a slightly different amount of drinking that I'm going to be doing.
It's a lot of variables to test out on a new mattress.
Dear Casper, today I did yoga. We're going to see.
Today I did yoga. Tomorrow I drink.
Not
to mention the guests.
Look, folks, you spend one-third of your life sleeping, or if you're like me, 1/16th, so you should be comfortable. Now, you, our listeners, can get $50 toward a select mattress by visiting casper.com/majority and using majority at checkout. So that's casper.com/majority. Offer code majority for $50 off your mattress purchase. Terms and conditions apply, of course, ones that I can't get into now because I'm not familiar with them. But they're not, I didn't notice any terms and conditions.
Me neither.
I don't know.
It's
maybe
my style.
You can't do like double sessions of yoga and then say, I don't know. And folks,
what's
as
a double
always,
session of
I
yoga?
I have no idea.
Okay. That's what I thought. I just was curious if you had been introduced to something recently.
We always, well, actually.
After a broadcast, I sessions of yoga.
We're
so excited.
We will put the.
I always hurt myself.
The offer codes in the podcast description. I went out the other night with old friends, John Benjamin, David Cross. And David Cross is trying to entice me into hot yoga.
Tell me when you're going. I will go to the same class.
Why? You think I can't handle it?
I have no idea what you can and can't handle. I just want to be there.
I've heard that's what the NBA players do, so I've been curious about that as well.
All right. I may.
The amount of toxins that are going to come out of your body within the first hour of doing that class.
They're actually
objectively,
gonna,
you will get sick.
They're going to make a noise when they hit the ground, the toxins, as they drop out.
I mean,
they're going to be solid.
Somebody dropping change?
You're going to look like those creepy dudes from the latest season of Twin Peaks. The ones who took over the... Oh, never mind.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon. We're back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the host and proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Benjamin Dixon, and also now the one of the proprietors of the North Star. Ben, welcome to the program. What's the North Star?
The North Star. Hey, Sam, first of all, thanks so much for having me, man. It's always a pleasure. The North Star is the abolitionist paper started by Frederick Douglass. And I have partnered with Sean King, and with the permission and the blessing of the descendants, the family of Frederick Douglass, we are relaunching the North Star as a digital platform. It's going to be a comprehensive media or company that does podcasts, videos, original journalism, the whole nine yards. So that's what we're doing, building the NorthStar.com.
That's so awesome. I'm very excited. When do you launch?
So we started it's been crazy, man. It has definitely been a ride so far. We did a pre-launch on last Thursday, a week and a day ago. And we had 120,000 people who signed up, expressed interest in participating, reading our content, donating, and all sorts of things. So we started that just last week, 120,000 signups. And we are looking to launch in earnest in 2019 around the birthday of Frederick Douglass. Now, we have a lot of things that are happening in between now and then, February 14th, which is his birthday. A lot of things that are going to happen between now and then, but that's when we want to make our public-facing launch.
Wow, that's super exciting. Congratulations on that.
Thanks so much, man.
That's really great. Folks can head over. What's the address? It's
buildingthenorthstar.com.
Great. buildingthenorthstar.com. We'll put a link to that in the podcast description and in our YouTube description and whenever
awesome,
our
man.
Descriptions appear. All right. So, Ben, crazy week.
Yeah.
Not too dissimilar from any other week, except for the nature of the craziness, a little bit different. But So, all right. So the midterm elections, it seems like as the days have passed, the Democrats did better than one. Than certainly it appeared on Tuesday, but they did. It seemed to me like as of Tuesday, about around where anybody, you know, within basically the middle of predictions, I would say.
Yeah. No. I think they did a little better than the predictions. I think honestly, we had our hearts wrapped up into two races in particular, the governor's race here in Georgia and in Florida. Those are really matters of our heart, and our hearts were broken. And so it was hard to look at all of those seats that flipped in the House and be excited about it because our hearts were broken. But we flipped 30 some seats. I don't even know the final total at this point. And You know, of course, Nancy Pelosi has an opportunity to probably be the speaker again. There's some challenges to that. We'll see how that plays out. But I mean, that's a significant deal. Anyone who thought we were going to get the Senate, you know, I was joking around about it. I don't care about bets. I'll make a crazy bet any day. But I honestly knew the odds were against us in the Senate with the number of red state Democrats that were up for reelection. And, you know, out of the red state Democrats that we lost, I wish we could have lost Joe Manchin and kept maybe one or two of the other ones. But I digress. Right. The point is, it was an uphill battle and we expected that. So hot takes being hot takes, people gave them that night. That became the narrative. But it panned out differently over the last few days.
Yeah, I think it's now we're up to 36 or something. And the percentage of vote. I mean, here's the other thing that is pretty clear, too. The percentage of vote that the Democrats got across the country was as big as some of the other past like wave elections.
Right.
Right. Right. Like 2010, I think it was even bigger than what the Republicans got. The pickups in the number of seats as a function of, I mean, there's still this sort of like a mini debate. Is it self-sorting or is it gerrymandering? You know, I think having talked to David Daly, I can't remember his name now, but he wrote a book about rat effed. And I'm quite convinced that this is about gerrymandering rather than self-selecting. I think there's some of that going on, but I don't think it's that dramatic. You know, and so the Democrats in terms of like the national vote, and that's
right.
It's only relevant insofar, and this is also true of the Senate, right? Like there was 10 million more Democratic votes for four less Democratic senators than Republicans. And it's obviously it was true for the past, like, I think seven of eight or six of seven presidential elections. The country votes Democratic. We do have other sort of another layer of determining who wins these seats, whether it's the president or the Senate or the House. But the fact of the matter is the country votes by several percentage points more for Democrats than they do Republicans. And so now the question is like, you know, where is the structural reform or how much more do you need to actually make it a governing majority?
Right. And that's the here's the problem with what you said, but the follow through here. You know, the structural reform that's necessary to have the voices of the majority of America represented on the federal level requires Democrats who are going to fight like hell. It requires Democrats who are willing to go in and make structural changes that are going to seem anti-institutional, right? That go counter to the status quo. I don't know that we have those Democrats in leadership positions. I'll just leave it at that. I do think that we have some new Democrats that have gone to the Congress who might be willing to fight dirty. I can't remember the name. David, the author of the book, Fight Dirty, who recommends that we get rid of the Electoral College because there are structural impediments to having the voice of the majority of Americans heard. And Republicans have exploited those structural advantages relentlessly on top of their willingness to break the rules. So not only are they breaking the rules, but they're exploiting the rules to their favor, the existing rules to their favor. And unless we get Democrats who are going to go in there and tear this apart and do it on the behalf of the right thing, then we're going to always be fighting these structural impediments.
Well, and I would say the first thing that that I hope and I frankly would like to see. I mean, I think it's time for a change in leadership. Now, Nancy Pelosi has said that this is, you know, her transition year. I don't know what that means. She doesn't want to specifically say she's a lame duck, et cetera, et cetera. But I would like to see that transition happen a little bit more quickly. With that said, we're going to see what the structure of the Democratic leadership is beyond those top positions. And if they start reaching out to some of those people and elevating them and putting them into some type of like, you know, sort of training positions and giving them, you know, sort of like the institutional education that you know, they need, then, you know, that may satisfy that feeling. But the first thing I hope that they go in and do is, and there's no reason why they can't do it. They won't pass the Senate, or maybe it will pass the Senate, is to come up with a new formula for Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act that was gutted by the Supreme Court. Now, remember, the Supreme Court said that it's okay to have a formula for preclearance where, you know, certain states need to check with the Department of Justice before they make changes. But we just don't like the way you've done it now. So Congress needs to come up with a new way. That should be something they work on. For instance, here's an perfect example of this problem. And I'm not exactly sure of the exact breakdown of these votes because I've seen two different things. But I'm going to give the Republicans the benefit of the doubt. In North Carolina, they won 50.3% of North Carolina's votes for Congress. They have 13 seats in Congress that go from North Carolina. They have 10 of them. So you basically have a 50-50 state, and you'd imagine that, like, okay, maybe it's 8-5, maybe it's 7-6 in favor of Republicans, maybe it's 6-7 in terms of Republicans to Democrats. It is 10 of 13. It is 10-3 with a 50%. I mean, that's effed up. That is a direct result of the Supreme Court rolling back the Voting Rights Act, and then North Carolina going to town with gerrymandering, which we know is racially I want to say it's racist in practice, but it is, race is used as a proxy there. Or I should say, go ahead.
They're literally segments of North Carolina, the way they've gerrymandered that state into oblivion. They're literally strips where the district is less than a mile wide. And though that cuts through urban centers, right? And so they've done what gerrymandering does. They've grouped and then they've cracked districts to make sure that there's no threat. And you can literally see the gerrymandered map evolve every so many years into how it changed from being a 50-50 state into being this 10-13 state, 10-3 state rather. And it happens on the wings of I'm not one who always attack the Democrats, right? I think that's a very necessary institution, and it's probably the only institution we have right now to fight back against the Republicans. But this happens on their watch. Like they observe it as it's happening, and they make one mistake, right? They allow one piece of legislation, or they allow something to happen where Republicans get their foot in the door, and they will exploit it to the point where now you no longer recognize the districts from North Carolina and anywhere else. So but to your point, I think it's actually a brilliant recommendation. That should be the very first thing that they do, and they can pass it in the House. Good luck in the Senate. You see some hope there for a reform to the Voting Rights Act, Section 5 passing the Senate?
I don't, but I do see that as a liability for those senators who vote against it. Right. All eyes turn to 2020 in terms of taking back the Senate. It's still going to be super tough because, you know, red states have hardened. But let's take Georgia, for instance. I mean, Georgia is now, I think, you know, if not already.
Purple, man.
Yeah. And it's let's just go purple. Over. Like I saw this breakdown from I think it was Charlie Cook. So these are counties in Georgia, and you would know these counties and their relevance more than I would. But these are metropolitan Atlanta counties. From 2012 to 2018, Gwinnett went from an R+9 to a D+14.
Yeah.
That's a 23-point swing. Cobb went from R+12 to a D+9. Henry, 3.3 to a D+15. Douglas went from a D+4 to a D+20.4. Fulton went from a D+29 to a D+45. DeKalb went from D+43 to a D+67. Fayette went from an R+31 to an R+13. Forsyth, R+62 to an R+42. So
we're looking at these.
I'm about to run against one of these Republicans. That's a good turn of the tide.
I think you better start thinking about it. Because
two counties in particular that I want to point out before you move on. Gwinnett County has been a natural evolution in just terms of population, right? There have been so many more African Americans who have just moved into Gwinnett County, and that accounts for some of the change. Cobb County, I am blown away by, because Cobb County is one of those counties that you just have to, like, I used to work in Cobb County. Our studios used to be in Cobb County. And, you know, I can't really tell the story without telling on myself. So marijuana is very legal in Boston, very illegal in Cobb County. You just don't smoke weed within 30 days of driving in Cobb County. That's they will pull you over and arrest you for their suspicion. I think you look high, and that disproportionately hurts black people. That's how entrenched Cobb County is. And to see that type of shift in a city, in a county like that, that blows me away. Gwinnett, I'm not as surprised because demographically it's been changing, but Cobb County, if you can make Cobb County even remotely purple, then you, something is definitely happening. And Newt Gingrich's seat, District 6, I believe, Lucy McBath just took that away from Karen Handel.
Yep, and that was the Ossoff seat.
Yeah, the autopsy. Exactly. And so that shows you, right? So this is the real narrative is this from Tuesday night. You know, our hearts were broken. But I think the real narrative has to be this. You lay the groundwork. Also, you can't take that away from him. He laid some serious groundwork there, right? He lost, but just a few months later, Lucy McBath was able to win. Gillum, we'll see how that works out in Georgia, in Florida, and Abrams, we'll see how the recounts and the impossible runoff plays out. But if they don't win, you have to understand, like, this is the bloody red South. This is the Confederate flag waving South. This is where you really shouldn't be out past certain times of night in certain counties. It literally is still that way. And the fact that they got that close to turning this state red, turning the state blue in the governor's seat, the next campaign doesn't bode well for Republicans. I think we're headed in the right direction, as hard as Tuesday night was, according to the hot takes.
And what do you think accounts for that?
Absolutely. No, I got it. The organizers. I have to pause. I'm glad you said that. The organizers on the ground in these two states, the campaigns and the way they worked with local organizers, city by city, block by block. I mean, the canvassing that took place was unbelievable. And this is why I, in response to a tweet from Chris Hayes, he was talking about pouring $100 million into organizers. I'm like, yes, but it needs to be organizers in the South, and it needs to be black organizers, because they literally they're changing the face of the South. I mean, the style of politics, it's changing. You're getting a more progressive breed of politicians coming from the South, you know, so it has to 100% go to the local organizers.
You know, it's funny because on the beginning of election eve night, Chuck Todd was on MSNBC. Chuck Todd, of all people. And I have to say, like, this is probably, I don't know, the first time in maybe more than a decade, if not ever, I have ever quoted Chuck Todd approvingly. But he said at the beginning of the night, you know, when I think people still had, well, look, Abrams theoretically is still in it, and Gillum is still theoretically in it. And at the very least, the how close it was, you know, like you say, is an achievement in and of itself. But he said, there's a message for Democrats here between those two and Beto to a certain extent too, because, you know, Texas is Texas. It's very Republican.
God, yeah.
That. Maybe the Democrats shouldn't be looking for moderates. They should be looking for progressives in these places. And he was still echoing that, I think, this week, yesterday, maybe. And so it's going to be interesting to see if that message gets conveyed. I think it will. But I think your point about organizing is absolutely right, because there's, you know, that's the way that you get back that 2008 Obama coalition. Right.
Yeah.
Is by driving the vote out. And we saw a good example of this.
One fine point I want to make on that detail is with the progressive, this is, I'll just say it, and however it falls, it falls. There's a tradition in the black community that is far more radical than probably any socialist would ever really dream of. Like, there is a black radical tradition that is waiting and dormant and not satisfied with establishment democratic politics, and they want something like Bernie Sanders and further to the left. And that's really kind of the style of campaign that that Stacey Abrams kind of flirted with, and Andrew Gillum flirted with. But the organizers on the ground, they understood the language. They understood what we were looking for. They understood how to convey it. And that's what mobilized and is changing the South. So I'll say it like this. If you want to win in the South, you're going to have to be radical. You just have to be, because the black community is what you need. You're not going to get us if you're talking some milquetoast centrist Democratic language.
Or you have to be close enough to being radical that it can be communicated and reinterpreted on the
multiple levels. Yeah.
Closer to the ground as having the potential for radicalism.
Absolutely. You got to at least be in the ballpark. But what you can't be is, I hate to say this, you can't be Hillary Clinton centrist. You can't. I don't want to relitigate 2016. But if you want the South, you got to communicate to us in a more radical language. And you have to connect with the black church. And just there's just so many things that are present in the South that just people who are not from here would not understand. And this is what we've been screaming. Black organizers have been screaming for the longest. Hey, guys, this is how you win the South. And we see the results in the changing. I mean, we're turning Georgia purple, or we have turned it purple. I think 2020, it might actually go blue. So, they really need to listen to the organizers on the ground. That's all I have to say about it.
And if the Democrats are going to take the Senate in 2020, they're going to have to figure out how to take one or two of these southern states. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And, Arizona, maybe there's an opportunity there, going forward, but maybe in some of the Southwest a little bit. New Mexico is now about as I don't even know if there's a single elected Republican in the entire state now in New Mexico. But moving back to the South, there's going to have to be, to get the numbers in the Senate, that's where it's going to have to be. You're going to have to knock off like Susan Collins, and you're going to have to it's going to be tricky. Now, let's just talk about this for a moment. If Bill Nelson, who is now somewhere around like 10,000 votes away from taking the lead, this is before the recount, taking the lead in Florida, they're still counting down there. I don't know how many votes are extant in like Broward County, but it's not inconceivable that he'll be within 1,000 votes when this is done. Before they head into a recount, and then we can also talk about the Florida recount. I'm going to get hives talking about it because that's basically why I'm sitting here, in my estimation, is because of that recount in Florida 19 years ago now, or 18 years ago. But so the difference between having Nelson and Sinema in the Senate, right, where it is 52-48.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to 54-46, is pretty big, because this is where it's going to land, right? You have Murkowski and Collins, who are going to be supposedly are going to be in that fulcrum now, right? And Mitt Romney is going to be the Jeff Flake. Mm-hmm. And this is going to put a lot of pressure on Mitt Romney, it seems to me, because I think he thinks he can go in there and pull a Jeff Flake. But the difference is that I think Mitt Romney has aspirations beyond the Senate, and Jeff Flake clearly just had him in the business. And so this is going to put a certain amount of pressure on Mitt Romney. If Democrats can, and Collins, there's somebody out there who hasn't stepped up yet, but will, who's going to have a $4 million war chest on day one.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Running against Susan Collins. So she is going to be, There's a certain amount of discipline that is going to be exercised on Susan Collins by her constituents. And Murkowski, I would imagine the same thing on some level. And so these two seats make a difference, not a dramatic difference, because we're still, Ruth Bader Ginsburg fractured a couple of ribs, and now everybody is just like, this is
Take me, or take me.
Yeah,
take my ribs. Seriously. What do you need? What do you need, RGB? I got you. What's your blood type? It's going to be tough. I mean, there's two levels, like you've already outlined. The actual race in Florida. There are a lot of irregularities. There's the fact that more people appear to have voted for the Senate race versus the governor's race. That's a little strange when you consider the amount of advertising and the amount of awareness about the governor's race. I mean, you see a drastic difference in the numbers there. And even now, I was just reading that there are protesters outside of their conservative protesters trying to block the recount. Now, when you say you get hives because it takes you back to 2000, the thing I remember the most were those guys from the Brooks Brothers protest, right, where they stormed the election supervisor's office and tried to shut down the recount. Well, they're doing that again. They're right now.
John
ABC
Roberts, incidentally, was one of them, if I'm not mistaken. Literally,
really?
One of them.
Did not know that.
Yes.
I did not know that. Wow. So, I mean, but this just shows you, like, their tactics haven't changed. What they're trying to do, their willingness to obstruct justice and or obstruct the election process, the enfranchisement. I mean, they don't care and they're willing to do all these things. So we'll see how that plays out. I think that we just have to have a different approach altogether. And I love what they did with Susan Collins and the war chest that has been raised against her. Like, I don't know if that would I can confidently say that something like that would not have happened from Democratic ranks. That came from the people. That came from grassroots. And that's really going to be our salvation in a lot of ways. We have to have the grassroots movements push the Democratic Party into being the type of leaders that we need right now, which are leaders who understand the score, who understand that the Republicans are fully aware that they're lying. They're fully aware that they are disenfranchising millions of people. They're fully aware that they're suppressing the vote. They are fully aware that these tax breaks don't help anybody but rich people. That's the entire point. And they have no problem with hypocrisy. And if Democrats are triangulating or trying to be bipartisan, we're going to repeat history all over again. And our only hope, I think, is the grassroots movements that will hold our leaders to the fire, feet to the fire.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, we need to have Democratic leaders who have the ability to hear this stuff. Like, I honestly feel like Chuck Schumer and Pelosi at this point don't even have the ability to hear it. Like, it's just that it's almost as if they're just the bubble that they're in. They may also have different agendas, which I have no doubt. But I think there is going to be a little bit of pushback on their leaderships if they're not, particularly Pelosi, has the opportunity to sort of like exemplify how she's going to transition. I don't know that it's going to happen with Schumer, but my sense is, there hasn't been anybody public who has been complaining about Schumer because in the Senate, because it is not to their benefit, right? There's no value in the Senate. Mm-hmm. You can get away with that in the House. It's tougher to get away with that in the Senate unless there's a sense that, like, we're all in this, right?
You
continue.
I was going to say that bothers me a little bit because I have more of a gripe with Chuck Schumer than I do with Nancy Pelosi. There is time for a new leadership. But I can say one thing about Nancy Pelosi is that she knows what the hell she's doing.
Yes.
The question
without
is
a doubt.
Right. She can get it done. But the question is, what is it? Right. What does she want to get done? Because whatever she wants to get done, I think she's probably the best equipped to do it in terms of using the levers of power, twisting arms, slamming down the hammer, doing what she needs to do. The real question is, what is it? What does she want to do? Chuck Schumer, I just don't think he can get anything done. He can't even hold Joe Manchin.
I think you're absolutely right about this. I think Pelosi is, from a practical standpoint, she never brought a bill to the floor that they couldn't pass. She could count votes much better than John Boehner ever could or Paul Ryan ever could. They never had a moment where they thought they could do something and didn't do it. Chuck Schumer is, putting aside all ideologies and whatnot, Chuck Schumer is just incompetent. He's just incompetent. He's bad at politics. And I think there's probably, you know, my understanding, there's a lot more to that story too. He's just like, he's bad at interpersonal politics. He's bad at politics. And the reason why he's there apparently is just that Dick Durbin, you know, people thought that Dick Durbin would step up and fight, and he didn't. And Chuck Schumer raises so much money that he has the ability to basically create a dynamic where he has favors being owed to him. And that is the way that people build political, you know, strength. And he was able to do that. But I think the guy, beyond his ability to raise a lot of money because of where he is situated, he is bad at politics. And it's certainly bad at, like, dealing with these institutional politics. But
oh, my God. And dealing with this breed of Republicanism, like I honestly think that he's delusional in thinking that there is a time where we can actually have more measured politics or more civil politics. I think he actually believes that we can go back to that. I don't know that I believe Nancy Pelosi when she says that she wants to be bipartisan.
Right.
I think that she is shrewd enough. Right. To say that and stab every Republican, like, you know, with an ice pick. I think she's cold enough to do that. But the real question is, the jury is out for me. I just want to know what it is that she wants to accomplish. And if that falls in line with what all of us want to accomplish, I can honestly say I don't know anyone more effective at getting it done. So if anyone's asking questions about Nancy, I think it should be what does she want to get done? Because if you like what she wants to get done, I don't know anybody else who's more competent. But Chuck Schumer, for certain, I don't think that there's anyone who – I think anybody could be better than Chuck Schumer in the Senate. I firmly believe that based on his record so far.
Couldn't agree more. And I should just add, you know, for the Florida stuff, one of the problems is going to be – and I remember this in Ron Klain, who was, I think, one of the attorneys for Al Gore at the time – And Matt just tells me too that Kavanaugh, I think I knew this, was also part of the Brooks Brothers riot. So
oh, come on, seriously?
Yeah. And but one of the problems that took place in Florida in 2000 was that Palm Beach, well, all the counties, Broward, I think it is, has only one machine to do a recount, right? And if there's going to be three recounts in that county, it's going to take time, like physical time, but there is a deadline by the state that the state does not provide waivers for. And if you do not do all your recounting by that deadline, you have to ignore the votes that you haven't counted, recounted.
Wow.
And so this was a big issue. That's what the value of shutting down that recount was to that Brooks Brothers riot, because it actually pushed it up against the deadline. And then Catherine Harris, it's Palm Beach specifically. Yeah. Catherine Harris said, we're not giving waivers to the recount. And then the Florida State Supreme Court said, you got to recount it. And then the U.S. Supreme Court said in the Bush v. Gore that they halted the recount. And so... And then I went on to take, and I think, you know, some listeners of this program know that I took about 1,000, this is before digital cameras, I took 1,000 pictures of my television, literally 1,000 pictures of my television during the course of the recount. And the whole trajectory of my life, I think, brought me to this point. But put that aside for a moment, because that's not important. So, Ben, let's just briefly talk about this. This is the election. There was a lot of there's a lot of other smaller issues. I would say this also. One thing that's relevant about the Florida Gillum race. There are three state Supreme Court seats in Florida that Rick Scott tried to appoint the Florida State Supreme Court, dominated by Democratic appointees, 4-3, I think it is. Would not allow him to do it because I'm not exactly sure. I'm not familiar exactly, but he was prevented from doing that. The next governor will pick three Supreme Court seats and will swing the balance of the Florida State Supreme Court to Republicans if it is obviously DeSantis. That, you know, on top of everything else, that's the stakes involved in Florida. on a federal level, Jeff Sessions fired very quickly after the election. Whitaker is put in there. Just briefly, like, we saw protests yesterday around the country, pretty decent mobilization for something that is like second order, right? It's not the stopping of the Mueller investigation. What do you what's your take on the Whitaker situation?
So this, I mean, what I'm little, I am surprised that Donald Trump would appoint someone like him and in the fashion that he did. But I shouldn't be surprised because this is Donald Trump we're talking about. I'm actually impressed that Donald Trump was willing to just say F it and fire Jeff Sessions. Like, what was it, the same day, the day after the election? I thought he would at least wait a week maybe. But no, he took it on the chin and said, I'm going to do it. So that was kind of impressive in terms of what Whitaker stands for. I mean, it's a complete anathema. Right. It's completely contrary to what any attorney general should believe, particularly his religious litmus test that he's going to place in this position. So that's extremely problematic. But I do want to say something real quick about the protest that erupted. I'm seeing a lot of hot takes about these protests being in favor of Mueller and in more specifically in favor of Jeff Sessions. And that's not really what's going on, right? People are protesting because the president of the United States is in his own is obstructing justice. And I don't know what else they were supposed to do besides, you know, take to the streets and let their dissent be heard.
Is that coming from the left that you're hearing those?
Yeah, man. You know, geez. I still hang out in some left circles. Right, look, and
well, no, listen. I hesitate to say the left because it's not that the leftism has anything to do with it as much as sort of the dumbness. Jeff Sessions is a could not be more racist or more detrimental or more unqualified to be the chief law enforcement officer in the country, but for maybe Whitaker. But
Whitaker,
that's,
I was.
But with that said, the protests are not in support of Jeff Sessions. They are trying to pressure essentially Republicans and Democrats and the establishment of the country in saying, like, look, we're watching this. We're aware of what's going on. And there is reporting that the White House is a little bit nervous about the response to Whitaker, because you're right. Whitaker is so nakedly unqualified for this position, inappropriate for this position, because he's already publicly stated that he doesn't think the investigation has any merit.
Right.
He's already gone against the, even the Department of Justice, which concedes that Russia interfered, whether it made an ink, you know, it affected the outcome. It doesn't matter. He's even disputed that publicly. So this guy has there's a taint on him in terms of whether or not he's conflicted. And so it's possible that Whitaker may not survive. You had the Solicitor General, one of Donald Trump's picks for Solicitor General, Conway, I think it was, who is obviously this other guy, you know, basically a centrist Solicitor General type of guy who goes up into the Supreme Court, Neil Katyal. Wrote something saying that Whitaker is his ascent there is unconstitutional, which is I have some problems with that theory because of what are the implications of it. But nevertheless, there's an indication that people may challenge legally anything Whitaker does. A and B. Here's the other thing. Mueller has a bunch of sealed indictments. I don't know how many. But those indictments are sitting in a court with a judge right now. Whitaker has no ability to have those indictments quashed. They just get unsealed by the judge or they don't. And so these protests, I think, are important to basically say to Donald Trump, who now I think is like we are, you know, for a while, he was cosplaying Il Duce, Mussolini. But I think, like, well, you know, from a practical matter, we're starting to head into there.
Oh, man. especially heavy. I mean, in addition to what he's doing constitutionally, what he's doing in terms of the media, the press. Did you see what he did with Abby Phillip this morning from CNN?
We played it just before you came on. You're stupid. Yeah. I mean, this stuff is off the hook.
Dangerous.
Yeah, it's super dangerous. And so there's, you know, these protests are I think, are really important. And the idea that, you know, frankly, anybody who says that these are in support of Jeff Sessions are the only people who think they're in support of Jeff Sessions.
I would agree to that. I would agree to that. It's just, you know, you have to come up for air from the Twitterverse. Twitter is not real life. It has real life implications.
Right.
But it certainly is not representative of real life.
Absolutely. Well, Ben, I guess we will we'll see where this heads in the next couple of days. I mean, who knows? Maybe by the time, you know, we post this podcast,
Whitaker will be out.
Whitaker will be out, or Donald Jr. will be indicted.
Indicted, yeah.
Or
that would make that would be a wonderful bow to wrap around this week, wouldn't it? I mean, not to wish ill on anybody, but if anybody deserves it would be Trump.
I'm okay in wishing ill on people. I have no problem with that. I got to tell you.
Right.
I'm not going to drag you down to my level, but and we should say that indictment could already exist. It's just a question of it being unsealed. And so who knows? But Ben, always a pleasure, folks. Make sure you check out Ben's new project. What's the website again?
Buildingthenorthstar.com.
Buildingthenorthstar.com. Ben Dixon, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, folks. We're going to take a break, and then we will go to Judy Gold. This guy, Whitaker, and... You know, we're going to talk in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have some very interesting interviews lined up. One is with this guy, John Sides, who's a political scientist. I can't remember the name of the book, but they did an extensive research. He and two others, and I can't remember the co-authors either. But all this information will be given to you on a need-to-know basis, folks. They did research which basically showed that the election of Barack Obama had a crazy impact on people's racial views, and that race during the Obama administration became a like a tribal signal, that things became racified, if you will, in ways that they had never done before. But we will talk to them. I know you're skeptical of this, Jamie, but
no, I was just going to say, were things not racified in this country already?
Well, certain things were.
We were
they
founded
actually have
on white supremacy and settler colonialism.
I think you will find that these political scientists are well aware of that. The they actually have a term. I think it was OFR, old-fashioned racism. They actually delineate things. Apparently, and this is going to be really surprising. This is their data. They found that. And it was also true of Democrats too during the 2008 primary, that there were some who became there was a lot more racist Democrats. They found that Obama actually helped the left in terms of race, and made them more sort of strident anti-racist in some ways. And I don't want to take all the thunder from this. We'll listen to the guy, but they found that. To a surprising degree, policies that we, I think, sitting in this room, assumed that most people saw through racial terms was not the case until Obama. And we'll hear more about that. And the other thing that is coming up is, what I think I've mentioned that we have a guy who's written the book on Mike Pence. And one of the things that he had said when we were on a panel at Politicon is that most of the people in the administration are Pence people. And I have a feeling that Whitaker is one of those people. He is full on God Squad, who has said basically that U.S. law, this is a former U.S. attorney, that U.S. law is should be informed by the Bible.
You know, I just want to say with regard to Pence and these God Squad people, I spend a good amount of time trying to explain Iran a little bit because there's so much fear-mongering and nonsense about Iran, and obviously you can do deals with them and so on. But when you, but conversely, they do, they have a limited democracy that operates in the context of a very repressive theocracy, and you can really do when you read about people like Pence. I mean, it's very analogous of what they're trying to do to the United States. Like, there still would be a lot of these, like, external electoral trappings if some type of, like, Supreme Guardian Council cleared people's Christianity beforehand. I mean, I'm only barely exaggerating. Look at Iran and look at how they actually do have an Islamic democracy that is radically constrained because of religion and socially repressive for precisely what these people want to do to the United States.
Yeah, I think most of their obsession with Sharia law is really jealousy.
Yeah, 100%. And if you
get competition,
no, literally,
they get to. That's my impression of conservatives.
That's perfect. No, it's exact. I mean, and that's an actual model there.
Speaking of that, let's play this clip of Donald Trump talking about, he's being questioned about Whitaker. And so Whitaker, there is a statute that says that in the absence of a secretary cabinet, a cabinet secretary, or, you know, someone at that level, like the attorney general, that you can put in a temporary acting person who is not confirmed by the Senate. But people are concerned about this because there's also the opportunity to put people in who have been confirmed by the Senate for other positions, other cabinet secretary level positions, and they could shift over. So there are questions about Whitaker. And of course, the questions really have to do with Whitaker not being particularly vetted. He was the chief of staff for Jeff Sessions. He was a former U.S. attorney, however, which is worth something. And but the guy has gone on television for the past couple of years and said, like, there shouldn't be, you know, that this the investigation is unwarranted and whatnot. And he also said in defense of, and we'll play this a little bit later, in defense of Jeff Sessions, that you can't have the appearance of conflict. And that's why Sessions recused himself. But here is Donald Trump, extremely defensive about Whitaker, reaching for just about anything he could.
Matt Whitaker has not gone for a Senate process.
Yeah, but neither has Mueller. Excuse me.
Pause it for 1 second. So the question is, Whitaker hasn't gone through a Senate process to be in the leadership of the Department of Justice. And so Donald Trump basically does the I'm rubber, you're glue, what you say to me, you know, what you say bounces off of me and sticks to you.
Yeah, but neither has Mueller. Excuse me. You talk about the Senate process. Mueller is doing a report. He hasn't gone through the Senate process. So you're saying Whitaker hasn't, but Whitaker has. Wait a minute. Because he was a really distinguished U.S. attorney in Iowa, and he was approved by everybody. Because to be U.S. attorney, that's top of the line. He was a highly respected, in fact, I'll tell you, the ambassador to China, as you know, Terry Branstad, who used to be the governor of Iowa,
trivia.
He told me that what a great choice that is, that he is one of the most respected people in all of Iowa. And that was coming from Terry Branstad, who was the governor. Look. Mueller, a big complaint people have, Mueller was not Senate confirmed. So he's doing a report. He wasn't Senate confirmed. Whitaker was Senate confirmed. And now he doesn't need this, but he was Senate confirmed at the highest level when he was the U.S. attorney from Iowa.
You know,
but
guys,
Mueller was not Senate confirmed. Why didn't they get him Senate confirmed? He should have been Senate confirmed. Because of all the conflicts, they didn't want to bring him before the Senate because he's very conflicted.
I'm the one
that cares
about Senate.
Because of those conflicts, they didn't want to bring him before the Senate. But don't tell me about Whitaker. Don't tell me about Whitaker because Mueller was not Senate confirmed.
Guys, okay. Let's confirm this at the highest level. What do you say we don't just do a regular confirm on this? I'm now, going highest level confirm for Whitaker.
Let's just, you know, before we even address how Donald Trump is so uptight about this, we should tell you that Mueller was a U.S. attorney. So he was confirmed by the Senate for U.S. attorney.
Not at the highest level.
Mueller was also the FBI director. He was confirmed by the Senate as FBI director. Mueller also was the FBI director beyond his term. And the Senate had to basically reconfirm him or give him a waiver to be that guy.
They wanted to see if he could do better. They did it as a favor to his wife.
Being an independent counsel beyond being confirmed as which is a U.S. senator, special counsel, I mean, U.S. attorney, essentially, which he had been confirmed for, is what he needs to be confirmed for. He was confirmed exactly for the position that he has.
You know what I really resent about Donald Trump?
But that, of course, is irrelevant anyways.
Well, not if you were confirmed at the highest level. Maybe you'd think that
by all the best people.
And Terry Branstad didn't say great things about you either.
He's one of the most respected people in all of Iowa, okay?
Yeah, I really resent the fact that, like, first of all, that Robert Mueller and James Comey are, like, subject to conversation. And secondly, that it's all relative to, like, hey, Donald Trump's criminal machinations are running up against these guys versus, hey, they built careers on terrorizing Muslims.
Right.
And, like, entrapping people and expanding the national security state. So that's another thing that I resent Donald Trump for.
Yeah. I mean, all this is true about Mueller, but it's you can hold both of those.
Well, I do every day.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, it's very analogous to the press. There's all sorts of problems with quote unquote mainstream corporate media, sensationalist, profit motive, corporate driven. And Donald Trump is an authoritarian who's trying to like destroy media. And so we need to be aligned with Jim Acosta. I mean, we're going to have to hold a lot of cognitive dissonance in today's world.
I would also say that the percentage of people who have that opinion of the media and express it on shows like ours, and I have a lot of issues with the corporate media and have had for 15 years.
No, you don't.
All of those people, us included, use the resources from that media every single day.
Well, that's another really important distinction, right? No,
right?
That's a huge...
Like, how can you criticize corporate media when you're quoting the AP all the time? That's where you get all your news because you're not a reporting outfit.
Well, I mean, very simply.
I mean...
Doing that.
But
and
I'm
also,
saying,
especially with like the New York Times, I mean... I have problems with some New York Times reporting, particularly like in the Middle East, with how they frame stories. But I'm also able to distinguish, like, and you know, Maggie Haberman is trash.
People do this all the time.
Yeah, people do this all the time, and also it's easy.
People are able to hold both of these things in the same time.
I think that
so criticizing people for going out and protesting when Sessions gets fired. Because that necessarily means they're supportive of Jeff Sessions, this horribly racist, corrupt, in my opinion, DOJ head is absurd.
Although
two notions at the same time.
Well, we can, we should, and I think we usually do. I actually think there's a real diminishing capacity for most people to hold two opposing notions in their head at the same time, which is a bigger problem.
Well,
yeah, that's true.
Humanity is devolving. All right, let's take a quick break.
That's right.
When we come
back.
Let's
get to Judy. Boom.
Speaking of devolving, let's...
Devolution with Judy Gold.
Here we go. I got to warn you, folks, I think she might have a cold. All right, we'll be right back. All right, folks, it appears that I hope she's okay, but we cannot reach Judy Gold. However, you can still we'll still play her opening because it's fun and it reminds me of Judy.
So. Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
The fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding.
She's calling him fire.
That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck? Like, this guy, he's... I fucking... How did this happen?
There you go. I just got a text from her. She's going to call us in 5. I was a little bit late in calling her, so she's going to... She's gonna yell at me.
Playing that card.
Let's do.
Do you see Mahler, Sam? He's so fucking good.
You doing Judy Gold?
It's like Robert Mueller. I know everybody says, "Oh, he had the FBI," but you know, he's a fucking leader. You know.
Let's play this clip.
That fat fuck.
Let's play this clip from Donald Trump about No, let's save that one for Judy, maybe. He didn't know who Whitaker was. Let's do this one. This, and look, Tucker Carlson, well, we'll talk about Tucker Carlson in a moment. Let's play this clip. This is Sepp Gorka, who apparently is drawing lines. But my favorite part of this this clip is... is when Hannity goes off introducing these two guys and they clearly don't know like what he's talking about. These are all just sort of like in this business, we have what are known as macros. Okay. So like, for instance, like my macro would be about, you know, Social Security and it being the, you know, most successful thing or whatnot. And, you know, I mean, you folks know zero sum game, et cetera, et cetera. For Hannity, classic. it's a series of stuff that is old. And these guys and random, and these guys can't even keep up with it. But here's Sean Hannity trying to still harp on the unacceptable tactics of the radical left wing mob.
Oh, and let me say, there was a report on Mediaite tonight, Dr. Gorka, that a CNN anchor apparently is receiving threats. No conservative. We don't want you. You're not a conservative if you're sending threats to people, period. Yeah. No, we have no room for it.
No.
Now, we have over at Conspiracy TV, MSNBC, they've...
Pause Rachel it for Maddow. 1 second. You should just know that Dr. Blasey Ford has not been able to live in her home since the Kavanaugh hearings because of constant death threats. From probably not liberals, probably not feminists, probably not leftists. I don't recall that coming up on Hannity's show, but continue.
At Conspiracy TV, MSNBC, Rachel Maddow is now encouraging people to go out and protest today. Part of a MoveOn.org effort. That's, you know, General Betray Us, the same people that, you know, featured elderly women vowing to, you know, private part punch Mitt Romney and burn this mother effer down, and ads comparing Bush to Hitler.
Pause. So, these guys are like, wait, what? Wait, I totally missed that. Because Move On is sponsoring these rallies to basically tell Trump you can't fire Mueller, and General Betray Us was when Petraeus basically came back and wanted more troops. I believe
you know this better than Bong Bong and Gorka.
Well,
you
of course,
be on.
Because I was
exactly Sean.
I mean, this was during the Iraq War. Now it turned out that General Betray Us That's what he did.
So
he gave away secrets to his girlfriend. And the other stuff, I can't even make out what Hannity was saying. These
I
guys
don't know.
Are,
it's just verbiage.
I just love the look on Gorka's face. And both of them just like, gonna look like I don't know it.
Look at Bongino blinking.
I did catch Maddow, though, going, don't let Tucker Carlson home without feeling like he could get jumped at any moment.
Right. But put a pin on that, remembering about the protest that MoveOn is doing, and continue.
You know, general betray us, the same people that, you know, featured elderly women vowing to, you know, private part punch Mitt Romney and burn this mother effer down. And
I missed that.
Ads comparing Bush
private
to Hitler.
Part punch
so
Mitt Romney
this is the
punch
network
him in the
Tom Brokaw's
part.
Proud of. This is this person, Maddow, claiming she's a news person.
That was a
really?
MoveOn campaign. Cock punch.
Well, she's not a news person, Sean. There is a direct line between Jim Acosta's behavior at that press conference and what happened at our friend Tucker's house. These people are repeatedly crossing the line of what is acceptable, whether you're a reporter in the White House or whether you're a demonstrator in D.C. They're undermining or they're broadening what is called the Overton window, meaning the list of things that are deemed acceptable.
Incidentally, Sean, should I stop calling Christine Blasey Ford and asking if she has Prince Albert in a can? Would this apply?
Let's just briefly touch on this Tucker Carlson thing, because obviously it was I have to say that I agree with Tucker Carlson in this, insofar as he said it wasn't a protest, it was a threat. They weren't protesting anything specific I had said. They weren't asking me to change anything. They weren't protesting a policy or advocating for legislation. They were threatening me and my family and telling me to leave my own neighborhood in the city I grew up in. Now, I do not think it's appropriate to threaten people. However, I think if you listen to what Tucker is saying, I think what would have been appropriate is for folks to go there maybe during the day, not at night, because the night can be threatening. Go during the day, and instead of saying, you know, you and your family should leave or else, they should say things like, you should resign from your television show, or please resign from your television show, or hey, hey, ho, ho, Tucker Carlson should go from his television show.
The year was 1970. In Germany, a group called the Beiner-Meinhof Gang was founded.
But wait a second, but honestly, like the idea that I think Tucker Carlson would disagree with Sean Hannity there. It is okay to protest against a government action. That's what Tucker is saying. And right. If the protesters had gone and said something concrete, like you platform someone specific, I think that would have been a more appropriate.
I'll be sure to bring that up at the next board meeting of Antifa, of which I am the CEO.
Well, there
Christine
you go.
Blasey Ford, is there a homo there?
I would like to...
Homo says what? Ha ha! Dr. Gorka got you again.
I don't think you should threaten people. That's not appropriate form of protest. But like Tucker Carlson says, if you have a specific complaint about what Tucker Carlson is doing, you should raise that. And I would go during the day rather than at night, so it's not as threatening. It's not threatening at all to protest during the day, it seems to me. And so that's what I would do if, you know, according to Tucker.
Red Army faction didn't just have a cool name. They also did cool things like kidnap titans of industry.
And there it is, folks. Hold on for one second. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, you're live on the air.
Hi, my name is Judy Gold, and
Judy!
I'm a big fan of the Majority Report, and I fucking hate Donald Trump so fucking much. He is the biggest fucking piece of shit. He's got his shit. He's a fucking, I can't fucking believe what he did at that fucking press conference. He is a slime bag, lying, disgusting. He has no friends, not one fucking friend. He's a fucking disgusting excuse for a human being. So I just want to say hi.
How's your week going, Judy?
I cannot. He called April Ryan a loser this morning. A fucking who says that? Who says that? My kids don't even say that.
Trump says
Elisa
that.
Elisa's telling me to stop screaming. Elisa's telling me to stop screaming, but she doesn't realize that, you know, this is the only place I can go.
This is it. This is why you don't have to yell at home.
Yeah, this is why I don't have to yell at home. That's what Sam says. Oh, by the way, Elisa says, oh, her whole face changed when I said Sam. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. I don't yell all the time. He's a fucking asshole. He's a fucking asshole. Like, he is gone. What about, it's interesting how the votes are getting smaller. And smaller. Yeah, because we're counting them, you fucking fat piece of shit. Here's my dream, okay? This is my dream.
Yeah.
Okay, my dream is that he has a massive stroke, like the guy, and ends up walking and talking like the man he made fun of. Okay?
Right.
Okay. So that's part
build
one.
That wall.
Okay. That's pretty good. I mean, that is as far as like, you know, sort of an emotional response, the idea of like willing on him a stroke and having him have to sort of perform his therapy in public would be interesting to watch.
Right. Just because he made fun of that disabled reporter and fuck him. Okay, that's part one. Now, part two is
right.
A few weeks later, okay, after he's off the life support system, because God only knows, you know, what, okay, I go and open my front door, and I look on the floor, and there's my newspaper, and it says in quotes on the top, The Failing, New York Times, and there's a picture of him in his wheelchair, all, you know, mangled and drooling, and he's in handcuffs, and
right.
His penis is exposed.
Why is his penis exposed?
This is getting like Abu Ghraib level.
Because he's in a hospital gown, and you can see it, and it's tiny,
mm-hmm.
and
mushroom shaped.
And it's a little mushroom.
This is a function of the stroke. This is a function of the stroke.
I want him humiliated.
If I didn't have the stroke, it would be different.
Him
trying to explain why his penis is small because of the stroke through his stroke would be amazing.
He would do that. He would say, oh, the stroke made my penis smaller. It's part of the medication. But, you know, the fact that people can say he did not mock that disabled report, like I have Trumpies, they're like, that didn't happen. It fucking happened. And fuck you, Jim Acosta has more class in a fucking snot coming out of his nose than you have in your entire fucking family.
Now, wait a second. So who in your life is telling you this stuff that he didn't mock that reporter? What Trumpiste is he?
I had a relative, okay, of mine.
Yeah.
Who was a Trump supporter, who's the only Trump supporter relative of
New
mine.
New Jersey.
Say that wasn't true. That was fake. Yes, in New Jersey. Oh, my God. How did you know?
So wait a second. So what do you do in that situation? Do you just, like, pull up a
video?
Well, now
I can't do anything anymore. Like, I can't.
Have you been told? Is there a restraining order involved in this?
I need the key.
Do you remember his?
What?
Do you remember?
Is there a restraining order involved in this? Are you not allowed to talk to the?
Well, we're not allowed to talk about politics.
When was that rule set down? Is this in anticipation of Thanksgiving?
After at a family gathering, when when the person actually said to me, because I said, "Really? Do you believe in gun control?" Yes, and then. Comma, but I think the NRA does some really good things.
Oh boy,
that was it. That was the end.
Do you remember his denial? Because before he did that impression, which that was amazing. He goes, "You should see this guy. I know the guy,
right?"
And then he does the impression, and then the next day he's just like, "I don't know who the reporter is." He literally prefaced the fucking impression.
What about Lisa? said he doesn't know what's his name, the one he just put in attorney general.
Yeah, let's attorney general. Let's play that clip. Actually, we were going to save that for you.
Thank you. While I cough.
He's also an inventor.
Judy is a little sick. All right, yeah. So let's play this clip. This is Donald Trump trying to pretend that somehow he doesn't know Matt Whitaker, the person he made acting attorney general. This was Jeff Sessions' chief of staff. And really would be almost disturbing if he didn't know who he was. Like, how do you make a guy acting attorney general that you don't know anything about?
Oh, you don't know him.
Right. But here's Donald Trump.
To be on your side.
Here's Donald Trump claiming this.
I didn't speak to Matt Whitaker about it. I don't know Matt Whitaker. Matt Whitaker has a great reputation, and that's what I wanted. I also wanted to do something which, frankly, I could have brought somebody very easily from the outside. I didn't want to do that. When Sessions left, what I did very simply is take a man who worked for Sessions.
There you go. You just took a man who worked for Sessions.
Yeah, that's so true, because Rod Rosenstein doesn't, you know, he has nothing to do with that department.
Right. Why would you want Rod Rosenstein, who's been acting as basically the acting attorney general for one of the bigger cases that they've been working on over at the DOJ?
That's a stupid comment.
A dumb comment.
Yeah.
Well,
he's just, you know what? He's so stupid. Like, he does that press conference. Did you see when he got so mad when they kept asking him questions? And he just backed up with a red face and was like a fucking 2-year-old.
Walks
like a fucking 2-year-old getting scolded by their fucking teacher, okay?
Walks away from the podium. Very Mussolini-like.
Yeah. And what about Sarah Huckabee Fuckface? What about how she's sitting there and he's going, and everyone's so mean to Sarah. And she's sitting there with one eye, you know, on the fucking left side of the room and the other eye on the right side of the room. Like, it's just... It's unbelievable. And she's like smiling like, oh, he likes me. He loves me. It's just disgusting. Then he goes, oh, Mike, you're going to be my vice president? It's like he's such a fucking dickoid. He's just they should have all gotten up and just fucking walked out and left him standing there.
I think bullying a 2 is so not classy. Jim Acosta, he's mean to Sarah Huckabee, who's a 2 every day. It's totally unfair.
Now, Judy Gold, from your perspective as a comedian and satirist, what do you...
Satirist? Well, fucking psychoist, yeah.
Do you think they put Jim Acosta in that front row just to create some type of conflict to avoid talking about the Democrats taking over the Congress? I mean, are the chances they accidentally put Jim Acosta in the front row? This is a guy they hate.
Right. Here's the thing. I don't know how it works and who seats them, but it was interesting that, you know, he was right in his fucking face.
Yep.
CNN was right in his face. You know?
I think that was done by design. I really do think that was sort of a planned moment. I don't know how planned out it was, but the idea...
Like putting him there and calling on him and being able to, you know, rant his fucking bullshit lies. You know?
Right. I think that's it. We want some conflict here today. This is the way we'll do it. Put Jim Acosta up front, and I'll take care of everything.
Yeah, let's show him. You know, he's tough. Let's show it.
Yeah, this is not sophisticated stuff. You don't need to be some type of, you know, you don't need to be the Desert Fox to decide like, oh, I know, we'll just put Acosta up there and we'll make a scene out of it.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure everything is planned except for, you know, any sort of intervention with the armed forces. He's like, look at that fuckface and realize he has the nuclear codes. That fuck, I would trust my fucking 17-year-old son with the nuclear codes more than I would trust that fucking asshole.
I would imagine just about everybody would, like even people who don't know your son.
But the way he behaves, like it's just like Kavanaugh, what a fucking asshole. Screaming, oh, did you ever black out? You're a fucking asshole. Your wife looked at you like she's fucking scared of you. And you know, he's just a fucking abusive fuck. Like any of those women lied, the woman has two front doors. Like, you're a fucking asshole liar. But they all behave like him. And what the fuck happened to Lindsey Graham? What happened to that guy?
Well, maybe he's just always been that guy.
Yeah, he's a horrible, disgusting human being.
But before he was, in the beginning, like last year, he was a little bit like,
don't believe anything I say,
Russia.
Judy. It's all an act. You want a mint julep?
How's your boyfriend, Lindsay? How's he doing?
What? How dare you?
Your boyfriend? How is he?
I'll see you at club.
You know, your lover, the guy.
That is a low blow. And I will not speak to Judy Gold again until I see her at her show in a month.
On Fire Island.
Okay, but the guy who, you know, who sucks your dick. You know what I'm talking about. The young guy.
No one has ever sucked my dick. Purely a giver, Judy. How dare you?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you don't do anything for anyone else. Because, you know, your hair. You fucking asshole.
Judy, did you really think more of Lindsey Graham ever? I mean, come on. He's so disgusting.
No, but he is. I've always thought he was disgusting. But then he was saying, you know, this Russia we have to protect Mueller. We have to protect. And stop saying Mueller. Okay, his name is Mueller. No one calls him Mueller.
Mueller, 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 you lesbian.
Like, they act like, oh, yeah, what's his name? Mueller? Like, they don't fucking say his name every, and you know, okay, and this is horrible, but you know they're probably all high-fiving each other that the notorious RBG fell in her office.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know? Absolutely.
I'm a little, but okay, I wish her a speedy full recovery and we need her, but I'm a little sore that she didn't maybe leave during the Obama era. I can't lie.
Well, of course. I mean, we were saying
well,
that.
Well, of course.
We were saying that
well, of
contemporaneously.
Course. I know, and I'm saying
right.
It contemporaneously now. But they need to court pack and have term limits. They need to. They need to.
Yeah, they also need to add more justices to the Supreme Court.
That's the court packing.
Know.
That's a court packing.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
Judy, were you heartened?
The worst impression.
Were you?
Thank you, Judy Gold.
Were you heartened at all by the election results this week?
I was heartened, and I feel like. You know, and it's even better when he's like, no, it was it was very good. You know, he's just, he lies about every, like, I'm telling you, he's the fucking psycho mental patient. But I was heartened, and I'm so glad that they're counting all the fucking votes in Florida. And fuck you, Melania. I'm so sick of people going, oh, Melania really hates him. I feel sorry. Don't fucking feel sorry for that bitch.
Thank you.
You know what? You stand by him. You're full of shit.
Thank
you. Anyone who's like, oh, poor Melania, fuck you.
Thank you.
So complicit in this. She's just as bad as he is. I want to tell you about the bullying and the bully and the no bully people nice. Shut the fuck up.
This is such a hard cosign.
We are aligned on
finally,
that,
finally, somebody who can say fuck Melania. Finally.
Oh, she's a
besides
fucking
me.
C.
Besides
Let me.
Me
tell you something.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck Melania. She's totally complicit. She's awful.
She is. You don't think so?
I think so completely. I've been saying that forever.
Oh, I know. And do you think Barron even knows what he looks like? He's the worst father in the entire world. And fuck you, Ivanka and Jared.
Yes.
You know? And first of all, there's a mass shooting at a synagogue. They're like, please don't come. He fucking goes there with his stupid blue fucking disgusting coat. Do you know what I was noticing? You know how, like, when someone is president, for those years, you usually have a certain style in clothing, you know?
You mean like oversized, ill-fitting Men's Warehouse meets
like,
Genovese
like,
family?
Like, you know, like Michelle, right? She, people would do, like, during the Carter administration, it was sort of like, you know, like Maura Ashley, or, you know what I mean?
You know what she means, Sam.
Yeah.
But no one puts on fucking long, goddamn, ugly, oversized blue coats and ties that go down to your fucking ankles.
Yeah, I mean, Judy, really, doing a lot of fashion criticism? Is this...
How's Melania doing fashion-wise?
Oh, well, that jacket was great. I don't care. Yeah, you're fucking... What about that fucking... What was that outfit where she looked like, you know... Where the hell was she? And she had, like, a... whatchamacallit on? Like, she looked like an equestrian getting on... What the, tie? She had a tie and a... She's so inappropriate.
You know what I remember? What we played this clip a couple of months ago when I was hosting and Sam wasn't here, and it was a Fox News clip where these middle school kids were at some anti-bullying thing, and one of them knocked over a glass of water by accident and clearly was, you know, embarrassed. And she did like the most. I mean, it was fine, but she was just like, "It is okay, it's just water, don't worry." And they clipped it and they put it out like, look at just humanity in action.
Right.
And what was amazing was like, you know, because during the Obama administration, you know, they went overboard in the other direction. But it would be like every day it would be like, here's Obama comforting a baby. Here's Michelle having a nice interaction with the guy.
Right.
You know, and this was the one thing they got from this administration was her not like jumping down the kid's neck
for spilling water.
Yes.
Well, I got to tell you, my mother would have been like, Judith, what the hell is wrong with you? You're a slut. Okay, but, you know, and she loved me.
It was tough love. It's tough love. She
it's okay. Because then, and what about this?
It's just okay. It's just bullshit. It's okay.
First of all, birthright citizenship, his fucking wife, both of his wives, the two out of the three, they wouldn't be citizens, and neither would the kids, you fucking fat piece of shit. I hate him.
Your hate for him dissipated at all since the last time we talked.
No, it's actually the point, you know, like, I now, when I get on stage, by the way, I'll be at the Treehouse in Westport, Connecticut tomorrow if you want to come.
Treehouse in Westport, so Connecticut, folks. There. Also,
yeah,
don't forget to listen to Just Kill Me Now.
Not, what?
No, no, go ahead.
What?
Go ahead. I was just plugging your podcast.
Oh, and I have an album coming out. You can pre-order on November 28th. It comes out on December 7th. What else happened that day? Anyway, so when I get on, you know, it's no longer about you, you know, yeah, but his policies and he's done a couple, you know. No, he is a disgrace. He's a laughing stock. He is no. It's no. There's no more his policies and my fucking taxes. You know, no more of that shit. There's no excuse. He is unfit for this fucking office. And then he tells them that, you know, the press should respect the office of the presidency. When the fuck is the last time he respected the office of the presidency? What about how he was like, and they were talking about the annexing of Crimea, and he was like, oh, Obama did that. What is wrong?
You're so dumb. Judy, I have a question that will shoot your cortisol levels up really high. I want to hear your response to this, but I want to give you and everybody you're around a pre-warning, okay?
Okay, pre-warning.
All right, Chris Christie was at the White House. Rumor he might be the new AG. Go.
She just died.
Shit, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Is that too much?
Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, boy.
Are you lying?
Sadly, I'm not.
You're not the one driving, are you, Judy?
Yeah, okay. If you're the one driving, I'm lying.
No, Elisa's driving. Elisa's driving. But can I just tell you something? First of all, he put Jared's father in jail. I can't imagine he's going to be attorney. Yeah, Chris Christie. I'm just telling Elisa. You know? You knew and you didn't tell me.
That would be a really good way to cuck Jared, though, don't you think?
They were at a meeting just a couple days ago on prison reform, and Chris Christie and Jared were in the same room. So it's not like these people. Look, what are the things that Jared's dad was in jail for? You remember what Jared's dad did to his sister? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. He did that whole video about with the prostitute, right?
He set up her husband with a hooker to blackmail his own brother-in-law for his sister or to his sister. That's who these people are.
Stupid fucking pieces of shit. Let me tell you something. Yes. Both. So fat. Fuck Chrissy is in Fuckface's office, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
And they're eating, and you know, some fat fuck like Kentucky Fried Chicken. Okay. And they're eating like, and all of a sudden, Fuckface, Orange Fuckface, has a massive stroke, and Fat Fuck gets up, right? And tries to pick him up, and he has a heart attack, okay, from trying to pick up Orange Fuckface off the ground. And then Mike Pence comes running in like, oh, my God, what's going on? Mother. Okay, that's my fantasy.
Wait, can you do Mike Pence again, please?
Wait a second. You have a rich and detailed fantasy life.
I love Mike Pence.
Aren't they horrible?
Oh, no, mother.
So he comes in, he says, mother, but doesn't, is it end there?
He gets on the phone on the desk. I'm working this out as we go along. And he calls the, security, whatever. And they come in very slowly because they all fucking hate him, you know. And then he called, mother, I'm so upset, mother. And tries. All right, it's getting boring as I go on.
Well, I was just wondering, like, maybe, you know, like, it's at this point, Mike Pence, I feel like then just sort of like a stage weight drops on his head from the rafters or something like that.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. I like that.
It's getting slapstick at this point.
Where Baron shoots him with a crossbow. And Baron saves all of us.
Exactly.
Then we have a parade for Baron.
And then, of course,
Baron comes in and is like, yay, ding. He comes in and sings, ding, dong, the witch is dead, the witch is good. And then,
And then Tiffany comes from out from behind the curtains.
And then Tiffany comes out.
And takes her seat at the... At the president's desk.
Tiffany
in the
says,
office.
Now let's get to business.
And all the, exactly. Yeah. We've got a lot of work
to
clean
up
this country.
After we get rid of my sister.
Well.
And then Jared and Ivanka are fed the piranhas.
Judy, I think this has been cathartic for people.
I hope so. I mean, I
you don't feel well. Jesus. Where are you performing this week? You're at Westport, Connecticut?
I'm at the Treehouse in Westport, Connecticut on Saturday night.
Okay.
Next Thursday is my birthday, the 15th.
What? Next Thursday is your birthday?
Yes. It is my birthday next Thursday.
My birthday is in a couple of weeks as well. And I was I was 3 weeks late. I was supposed to have my birthday like around today.
I want more time to gestate.
I was 3 weeks late.
3 weeks late?
Yeah,
I believe
back
that's at the, then they did
okay,
not.
Okay, that's ridiculous.
Right? I was just like,
well,
I'm hanging out.
The doctor sucked.
Your doctor sucked. Your birth doctor sucked.
I mean, who fucking makes a mistake like almost a month away? Your mother must have been like, what the fuck is going on?
My understanding is they were like trying to drive around New York City on potholes to try and like,
is that true?
Yeah.
Is that really true?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Wow. That also explains some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, Judy, want to wish you a happy birthday. You are.
Thank you.
National,
I love you guys.
National treasure. And it feels a little bit like your passion
your passionate hatred of Donald Trump has diminished a little bit. It's starting to wane.
No, it hasn't.
I'm
no,
joking.
It hasn't. No
Trump asks Barron why before he does it, and Barron goes, "It's not personal. It's birthright citizenship."
Exactly. Boom.
Oh God! What a fucking piece of shit!
All right, Judy, wait a second. What is the name of your album?
Well, the name of my album, which my publicist just told me was the stupidest idea, is "Kill Me Now" because that's the name of my podcast. So he's like, "Great, Judy." When people Google it, they're going to be like, "Oh, I didn't get the album; I got the podcast." So now, I guess I have to make a website, "Kill Me Now" album, instead of I'm such an idiot.
All right, Kill Me Now album. It is.
Yeah.
People will check it
out.
Well,
not yet. It'll be 11/28, November 28th, pre-order.
That's my birthday.
But, yeah, that's it. Yeah, listen, gazai-gazent.
All right. Well, Judy, thank you so much. Love you. Hope you feel
all
better.
All right, good Shabbos. Love you.
Bye. All right, folks. We're going to head into the fun half of the program, wherein... Oh, well, you know what? We should do this. Ladies and gentlemen, I promised... a television host, a well-esteemed newsman, that I would deal with a problem that we have here. Now, you should know, here at the Majority Report, we believe in free speech. That's why we allow Judy to come on and talk about such things.
I'm assuming my Dave Rubin clip will be restored shortly because I was deplatformed and my speech was violated.
We are that is still going through an administrative procedure. But it has come to my attention that let's go with the original exchange, shall we, Matt? That Matt Leck. Super producer here at the Majority Report, has been going on Twitter and saying mean things to the to Boris Epstein, who is the esteemed commentator for Sinclair local-owned media. So someone writes back to Boris Epstein after Boris says something. You do realize the First Amendment does not guarantee you the right to question Donald Trump or any president on the White House grounds, right? I realize it's lucrative to paint yourself as a martyr, but this is a misleading application of the Constitution. This is a response to Jim Acosta. And then someone responds, Kendall Bill, Russian guy weighs in. Now, Boris, of course, was born in Russia, but... is an immigrant to this country, or immigrant, I should say. Tolerant left, using my nationality against me. We came here legally when I was 11, and I've been a proud American citizen for almost 20 years.
Nice try.
Nice try.
We did this in the Orthodox way.
Wait a second.
He's super young.
Yeah, but wait, he's been here for 20 years. He still has a pretty thick accent, doesn't he?
We run.
I'm trying best.
I'm trying best. My family came, run criminal rackets, Brighton Beach, like you're supposed to do.
Okay, so
he's 3 years older than me. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
He's an 80s kid.
And so...
Michael J. Fox was the man of our time.
It is... It is inaccurate to call him a Russian guy. He is American, obviously, of Russian heritage.
I can admit that's a bit xenophobic.
It is a bit xenophobic. Hmm. However,
my family came here and did something for this country.
It came to my attention that Matt Leck responded with, quote, not sending their best. Which, of course, is a quote of the president of the United States and one of the complaints that the president has had, that we have immigrants coming and we're not getting the best, cream of the crop, implying that Boris is subpar in some way. Now, it's arguable. It's definitely arguable. I mean, but Boris responded with this. That's funny, Matt. Now, when you have any modicum of achievement, instead of just being a snarky nobody on Twitter, get back to me. Now,
shit.
For someone who is so sensitive about being called Russian or so sensitive about not sending the best. This is sort of like the, it seems to me to be an inappropriate attack, right? Like, you know, that you, Matt, you obviously you're achieved. You've
literary hangover is growing at a just record pace.
Your literary hangover.
Gee, you fucking three blunts an afternoon, bro.
You are the producer of a 5-time award winning podcast.
It's true.
You have a degree, don't you?
Multiple degrees.
Yeah. Couple of education degrees, probably more than Boris.
Probably. Two and undergrad and a master's.
I learned what I do from School of Life.
I also achieved a ratio here on this. If you look at the ratio there, it's 57 replies to 35 likes for Boris.
That's pretty good.
I got the ratio.
I got the same number of, I got about 7 followers out of it. That's the same as the amount of retweets that this has gotten. So
there you go. Boris Epstein. Now, what's really stunning to me is that here Boris is on how many stations across the country? 30 television stations? The guy's on television. Look at how many followers he has.
He also was an advisor to the President of the United States.
He has 33,000 followers.
Yeah, not very impressive.
That's not very much.
That's less than Mindy.
We call
him less than Mindy.
For a guy we call
Mindy's a heavy hitter, though. So.
That's not very much for a guy we call Boris Must Run Epstein.
Exactly. I mean, here's the thing. He's forced on people in some ways. I mean, this is like, you know, he's... instead,
he's a literal corporate plant.
But he's an electrifying presence on television.
Well, I mean,
no one reads a prompter better than that guy.
He's like an accoster in a way, right? I mean, honestly, like he is he's force fed onto people. He has been talk about affirmative action.
He comes to this country.
This is like they need to fill a quota of one Boris Epstein. That's basically it.
Doesn't say a lot for how good competition is working in the corporate media marketplace these days.
I would say. Very strange. Like they honestly can't find somebody more suited for television than Boris. I wonder what that deal is. I wonder like why they had to take Boris.
President Trump will continue diplomacy unconventional. Liberals will react, but the success will be in the puddings.
Now
that we see.
You're not making fun of him for being Russian. You're making fun of him for having an unintelligible accent and being a
being
television.
Maybe a little flat-footed on television.
Yeah.
Is where my material is coming from. As an example, I work regularly on my show with almost certain Russian spy, Alona Minkowski, so I have no beef towards Russians.
Right.
Who's out? And more importantly, what this means for the American people.
Exactly.
So. Now that your tweet has been highlighted on this program, I wonder if that constitutes a modicum of achievement in his mind. And maybe you should get back to him.
I know. I'm going to try to get back to him fairly often and see just when is the time I should have gotten in his eyes.
I mean, a modicum of achievement. That
shouldn't be that much.
How much would you need for a modicum?
Like, I actually consider this getting retweeted by him to be an achievement.
Yeah. Hmm. That in and of itself. All right, folks. We got
to
take a...
You define success on different terms, Boris.
I was going to say.
You should smoke a J and read a
book. Modicum of achievement feels like what his, it's going to be on his tombstone at this point.
There were many modicums, I can tell you.
How did this guy get to be special, a special advisor to the president?
My father sold Donald Trump a medallion.
A special assistant to President Trump. And how do you lose that job so quickly?
The cartel I was representing fell apart on further inspection.
It was appearance of impropriety.
Appearance of proprieties. But now I'm on Sinclair. Most importantly, what happens for American people? Suburb vote change. But suburb vote go back. President Trump is going to continue to tell it as is.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll be right back after this. J.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook. Throw our hands
up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.